Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls with Dr. Kirby Surprise as we talk about synchronicity right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest, Dr. Kirby Surprise, and of course, your phone numbers. Kirby, where do we get your new book, Synchronicity?
Well, it can be ordered on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or you can go to New Page Books website.
You sound like you had fun putting it together.
Oh, I had a great time putting it together. One of the interesting things was when I was writing it, the universe began giving me examples of what I was writing about. I wrote them in as I did the book.
It does. You open up your mind. It just comes right to you. Have you practiced this yourself?
Oh, I've been doing this about 30 years now.
Yeah. Well, it works. Well, what was the most fascinating thing for you when you were doing this? A story that you've come across that just boggled your mind?
Well, I'll give you one that happened to me that sort of set this whole thing off for me.
Okay.
Back when I was an undergraduate, I suddenly had this sort of profusion of these events around me. And I was completely baffled and kind of freaked out by it. So one day I was taking a friend of mine to the local college, and I dropped him off, and I was sitting in my car in a parking lot. You know, I was going to wait about an hour for him. And it was a fall day in upstate New York. It was a little chilly, so the windows closed. And on the way over, we had been joking about our favorite National Enquirer headlines. You know, alien has Pope's daughter kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, thinking about how much fun it would be to be a writer for that. And we were joking about, one of their headlines in the last few weeks had been about this house on Long Island that was haunted and rolled over on its side. We thought that was hilarious. So I dropped him off, and I was sitting in the parking lot, and I was looking down this grassy knoll, and there was a cottage about 60 or 70 yards away from where I was. They used for visiting faculty. And an ad came on the radio for the movie Carrie for a local radio station.
Mm-hmm. I remember that movie.
Stephen King novel. And at the end of the movie, she basically destroys her house telekinetically. So I'm looking at this house, and, you know, being sort of a budding psychologist, I'm thinking, you know, what effect would it have on a human being if they could actually move objects? Because the way we perceive ourselves in the environment is based on the fact that we have to walk over to something and pick it up and, like, operate on the environment. It's like, what would it do to somebody if they didn't have to get up anymore? So then I was thinking, what would it be like if you actually could move an object as large as a house? So I'm looking at this house, and I'm going, gee, what would it be like if you could just roll the house over on its side? What would that do to you psychologically? And as I'm watching, the house begins to shake. And swear to God, the house rolls over on its side. And, like, the roof is facing me. And I'm more than a little bit stressed by this. So I calm myself down, and I start thinking, this is a vivid dream. You know, I'm asleep.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's not real.
Not real. And, you know, like, I check back to my memory. Like, if I'm sort of waking up in a dream, I try to figure out where I've been. And I'm like, no, everything kind of fits. I'm awake. And then I looked at it, and the house was still there on its side. And I said, well, is it possible I did that? And I said, absolutely not. There's no way. I mean, human beings don't do stuff like that. So I decided to do an experiment. I said, okay, if I just did that, I want the house to crush itself into rubble the way it did in the Carrie movie. So that's the last thing she does, is she demolishes her family home. So I'm looking, and the house begins to collapse. Beams are coming through walls, windows are breaking, thing is crushing itself into a pile. And now I'm really upset, you know, because this is just too out of reality for me. And then I see this flash of yellow paint on the top of the roof, and this huge bulldozer climbs over the top of the house and crushes it flat. They were demolishing the house, just that from where my car was, I couldn't see the equipment. It was behind the house. So, but I got the experience I was looking for. I got to have the experience of what it would feel like to move an object like that. But just synchronicity provided the actual reason for it. And that set me to thinking, okay, the only way I'm ever going to figure this out is if I try to ask the unconscious how this actually works. So that's what I did. I asked the events themselves, how does this work? You know, show me how this works, because I just can't figure this out. And so over the course of the years, I gradually, by observing the events, figured out that I was looking at reflections. That, you know, what you were thinking about was, you know, essentially what was going to happen. Only it wasn't cause and effect. It's like, you know, it's an illusion. You get the illusion of the house moving when in actuality there's a real cause there somewhere.
All right, my friend, let's go to the calls. We'll go to Racine, Wisconsin, to start east of the Rockies. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Hey, George. It's Dr. Kirby.
Hi.
Got a question for you, and it follows, it kind of counters what you've been saying about thoughts like the house and reality. Okay, short. Still trying to put this together. Short trip, 50s, polio epidemic, misdiagnosed, spinal meningitis, tagged, bagged, and sent to the mortuary. Grandfather sends me back with something to do, and over 50 years, things he showed me has actually happened. And, George, you and Mahatma Gandhi showed up at the same time, but I was told, no, you didn't. Space-time doesn't exist for them.
Maybe not.
How do you explain thoughts and linear reality compared with that?
Well, thank God I don't know enough to explain most things. You know, I think that the universe is beautifully complex and vast, and I don't have explanations for every individual event. I do tend to think in terms of what's most probably true or most likely to be true. And, you know, I just don't know what happened in your instance. And it would be pretty pretentious of me to come up with an answer for a situation I wasn't in on.
Actually, I was hoping you could so I could understand it a little better. But
Well, I think some part of us is not bound to time and space. You know, I think that, you know, the part that creates the synchronistic events, you know, I think when, you know, string theory talks about these, you know, alternative dimensions, they talk about M and M and probability space. I think it's likely that those are actually the sort of planes of consciousness that the mystics talked about, that physics and the metaphysics are actually the same thing, and that some part of us is not time-dependent. I think that as individual organisms in a body, though, that we're pretty dependent on linear stuff. And I think that there's some things that we just don't get to figure out.
Okay, well, I hope that helped you. Let's go next to Cleveland. Rob's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Rob.
Hello, thanks for taking my call today.
Sure thing.
Hi, Dr. Kirby. I was wondering if, like, George, you say on the show a lot that people have this feeling that time is going to get really bad coming up.
Something.
Like, yeah, that something's coming up.
Something's coming up. It might be good, but something's coming up.
Yeah. But could we be creating that through this synchronicity?
Can we create these things, these feelings of doom and gloom or these feelings of euphoria? Can we do that to ourselves, Kirby?
Oh, absolutely. I've had many, like, you know, clients who are legitimately paranoid who are scaring themselves to death, and they're doing it with synchronicity as well. I mean, you know, whatever strong emotion you have is going to manifest in some way in your environment. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, powerful, crazy people in the world who want to control everything. I just happen to think that most of them are too incompetent to accomplish that. I do think, though, that you look for a conspiracy, that if you look for evidence that something really bad is going to happen or evidence that something really good is going to happen, you're going to see reflections of what you're looking for in the environment, you know, which is why I sort of operate on evidence-based stuff. Because I've fooled myself into thinking stuff that I just happen to be thinking often enough so that, you know, I want to see, like, some actual evidence that something is true. And, you know, I also think that our individual lives are kind of short and that, you know, sometimes we're thinking about very wide social trends that may take decades or centuries to come to pass. So, you know, I'm sort of into trying to look at things with an expectancy of, you know, being hopeful in some way. You know, I think that despite abuses of power that are now becoming more obvious to people, I think that human beings generally trend to trying to be cooperative with each other. And I think the more that we communicate with each other, the technology allowing, you know, the Arab Spring or, you know, websites that you can actually see, you know, who's contributing to your congressman and how they voted kind of stuff. I think people will become more aware, and I think things gradually get better.
Let's talk a little bit about the verbiage of coincidence. Again, I don't believe in coincidences at all, Kirby, but what's your definition of coincidence? Because we might be talking about the same thing.
Well, I think coincidence and synchronicity are different. I mean, coincidence can be said to be any things that happen together that appear to be related, but that you don't know what the causal factor really is. You know, synchronicity is more something that has a personal meaning for somebody. You know, it's some part of your thoughts and your inner states are manifesting directly. Now, there might be sort of societal synchronicities. You know, there's that old story we hear about in high school that President Lincoln was had a secretary named Kennedy, and Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln. And
Yeah.
But, you know, that stuff's out of my range. You know, I can vouch for the fact that we cause our own personal synchronicities. The wider society stuff, I just don't know. You know, I don't know if we have a collective pattern, you know, or not. I do know that, you know, we tend to find meaning when we look for it.
Okay, next up we go to Dallas, Texas. Ed, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Ed.
Hello, George. This is Ed. I'm a broadcast engineer, so you know I pick everything to death. Dr. Kirby said something a little while ago that I'd like more information on. As you know, our human beings are analog creatures. We receive all of our senses through touch or smell or hearing or vision by analog means. Yet he said that our brains were digital.
They are.
Where's the motive? How do we decode that so that we can get in there and find the code key and decipher it and be able to fix some of our problems?
All right, well, we are digital. It's just that we're so vastly complex that we use sort of an analog analogy. Every nerve that we have operates on a fire or rest sequence. There's no in-between. So all of your sensory nerves, the billions of little sensors you have in the environment, actually are producing digital signals. And they're carried along the nerve pathways the same way that, you know, that signals are carried along wires. The brain is a digital processor. It's just that it's so vastly complex, you know, that, you know, it appears to be something more than digital, when in fact, you know, it's dealing with coordination of individual on and off signals on a cosmic scale. Now, when we try to interface with the brain, for instance, there are ocular implants. We can give people artificial hearing. The interface to the brain turns out to be a lot simpler than we thought it was. The brain figures it out for you. So if you lay a series of chips on the auditory cortex in the temporal lobe, you don't have to know how to do the interface. The brain will listen to the electrical signals from the chips, and over time, it will figure out how to decode stuff. So it's so sophisticated that we're actually now able to, like, see in the near future, we'll be able to give people artificial sight. We're going to be able to have them control, you know, bionic limbs, because we don't have to figure out the complex technology. The brain is technology. The natural world is the most complex and advanced technology imaginable. We're just, like, slowly catching up to it.
Do you find, Kirby, that as people try to develop their synchronicity, they also open themselves up to more psychic or intuitive experiences?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the book, I outlined a thing called artificial psychic phenomenon, which is, you know, synchronistic events will give you information. You know, they will tell you things that, you know, you have no possible human way of knowing. And I think what they do is they reflect back to you in a perceivable way processes that happen that are normally unconscious. And I have, like, no good explanation for the link between physical reality and non-physical reality. We've been, you know, we can listen to protons wiggle in your brain with scanners. We can see individual neurons fire, and we can't see any point of transition that would cause things like this, but yet they happen. And, you know, you could use synchronicity to look for maybe extrasensory talents that you have that are not immediately consciously aware, But like anybody that likes to play with extrasensory perception, a lot of times what you get is what you're pretending that you're looking for. You know, you can misinterpret things, you can create false meanings for yourself, so it's kind of a slippery ground.
Let's go to Eric in Poughkeepsie, New York, on the wild card line. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, thanks, George. Good first-time caller. Dr. Kirby, both of you are going to be amazed at this story. I've had it for 31 years, kept it just amongst my friends and loved ones. Real quickly, I was working in Leominster, Mass., 56 miles out of Boston. A friend of mine called, said his daughter and him are going to go to Cape Cod to meet Louis Armstrong's old photographer, Jack Bradley. Was a friend of mine. I said, listen, I'm coming. I'm going to hitchhike. It was snowing out. I get to Boston. I hitchhike. I get picked up by a fellow. He's drinking, and he's got himself a marijuana joint. And I'm saying, oh, my God, it's ice out. Let me out of here. So I said, listen, can you just let me out over here? I got to make a phone call. So I got let out, and I was at a mall in Plymouth. Called up my friend Jack. He goes, yeah, you'll be here in 5 hours. I'll leave the door open. So I get out, start hitchhiking. I said, God, just make it safe. That moment, a woman stops with her two sons in a van, says, where are you going? Cape Cod. Get in. We are too. Where are you going? I said, I'm going to Harwich Port. That's where we're going. She goes, what do you know there? I go, a friend of mine and his ex-wife, Jean Fados. He goes, Jean, she's our next-door neighbor. We're the manager of the hotel, and we just made a computer photo at the mall of her niece, Laura. I said, that's my goddaughter. She pulls it out, and there's my goddaughter.
That's unbelievable.
I go, oh, my God. What's the odds of that?
That's right. And, Eric, let's add to it. As a boy, I lived in Leominster.
Yeah. The end of time can be through.
In my during this summer.
I had to get the story out. It's incredible. I couldn't make it up. I have another one, but you guys are busy. Maybe some other time.
All right, my friend.
It's almost the same thing.
All right.
It involves Paul Desmond, the jazz musician.
You got it. Be well. Thank you. Yeah, as every summer we go to Leominster and Fitchburg in that area, and my cousins were there, and I lived there with my aunt and my cousin in the summertime. It was a great place in New England. Great place indeed. You've got a speaking engagement coming up on March 1st, don't you?
Yes, the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. It's where I got my doctorate.
Just go to Kirby's website, those of you who live in the greater San Francisco area, and you can track his couple speaking engagements. He's got another one coming up in May in California as well. So take advantage of it. Do you like speaking before public? I love it.
Oh, yeah, I do. Absolutely.
It's not only is it informative and fun, but you really get that interaction that you don't normally get.
Absolutely. And sort of synchronicity is sort of about interaction. That's sort of, the live flow of events.
Yep, absolutely. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with final phone calls with Dr. Kirby Surprise as we talk about his latest work, Synchronicity. The Art of Coincidence, Choice, and Unlocking Your Mind. It's a great read, by the way. And, the next time you walk around the corner thinking of your friend, and there they are, that's what it's all about. That's what synchronicity is. I'll be back in a moment, tell you a little bit more what's in store for our next Coast to Coast show, and we'll take final phone calls, so don't touch your dial. Well, this is our final month for the Coast to Coast merchandise blowout before the new items come in. Take advantage of it, of shirts, caps, and things, by getting a 25% discount. Go to coasttocoastam.com, click the store link at the bottom of the page, and then put in this coupon code, C2C25, C2C25, and click activate when you pick up the things that you want to pick up. On our next Coast to Coast program, Raymond Moody joins us as we talk about Paranormal, My Life in Pursuit of the Afterlife. Looking forward to talking to Dr. Raymond Moody on our next Coast to Coast show. And when we come back, final phone calls with Dr. Kirby Surprise as we talk about synchronicity. Back at you now with Dr. Kirby Surprise and your final phone calls as well. Are there any more scientific studies underway, Kirby, that you might know of about synchronicity? The days of the J.B. Ryan, are they gone?
No, actually, there was a couple done just this last year where they tried to see if they could create variable amounts of them. One, Gary Schwartz.
I know Gary. Sure, yeah. Thing.
Yeah, I think I just did a study where they tried to have people create found money synchronicities. And they had a control group and a couple of condition groups. And, you know, as slippery as synchronicity is, they found an increase in the events amongst all the groups, not just the ones they intended. So it's, you know, they're still doing it, and they're still trying to figure out, you know, the mechanics of it. Gary liked the book, by the way.
Good. Good. He's tough, too. So if he liked it, then you're onto something.
So, yeah, I mean, it's ongoing. What I'm doing is a little different. You know, I'm more of a storyteller. So I'm saying, you know, instead of just looking for, you know, synchronicity in the laboratory, just go play with it. I mean, it's there to enjoy. You know, just go start creating your own. I think the days of trying to prove it exists are long gone. Now it's sort of, well, what do you do with it?
We agree that it exists, but do we know why?
Well, the explanation for why is long and kind of complicated. One of the things that the book did, it lays out the first sort of comprehensive model for what causes the phenomenon. You know, I think that I look at it this way. Organic systems tend to have better technology than anything we design, and that if it was possible for an organism to change the odds of the environment in its favor, it would be a life form that figured out how to do it. And I think that, you know, Rhine's work, for instance, showed that animals do this too. You know, they don't even have to understand that they're doing it. But, you know, if anything that basically thinks or has emotions seems to be able to have some effect on synchronistic events, and I think it's a natural survival tool. You know, I think that, you know, for instance, hunters, Aboriginal hunters hunting in grasslands for gazelle. I think they're watching the shape of the clouds and the way the patterns on the grass form when the wind blows across them and what they're thinking when a bird flies by. And I think they're reading the environment. They're reading the synchronistic events as one vast living thing for information on, you know, where the deer are. You know, I think their view of how to be in the world in some ways was actually much more sophisticated than ours is. And I also don't think they took synchronistic events or the information from it as absolutes. They sort of took them under advisement.
Well, could you say beyond any shadow of a doubt that synchronicity exists, it's real?
You know, I don't believe anything beyond a shadow of a doubt. I think in terms of what's most probably true, I mean, that's the one thing I really love about science, is that good science doesn't tell you what's true. It tells you what the odds are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the odds are high.
Yeah, I believe so.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Petaluma, California. Aaron, get us started. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure.
I've been doing this for a long time, and something you said earlier, Dr. Surprise, made a lot of sense. It's when you've gone through, like, traumatic experiences or things that are of a little bit more of a dark nature and you've kind of repressed things, it kind of interferes with how you are able to manifest things or create that synchronicity, or it kind of interrupts the flow. And I was wondering if there's a way to calm that or maybe address it or look at it as an opportunity to address something when those interruptions come up. And if it's possible to get beyond that, to transition out of it or to use it as a tool to maybe listen to yourself better. I don't know. That's the best I can do to explain.
Well, a simple version of that would be, you know, our ability to control these events manifests because consciously we have some choice over what we think and what we feel. You know, when I was taking my licensure exams, when you study for them, they say, you know, well, somebody has this particular condition, what's the treatment? And they say, if you don't really know what the treatment is, say cognitive-based therapy, which is teaching someone to control what they think. And because we have choice about what we think, we can, you know, choose patterns of synchronicity. For instance, you know, if life seems like, you know, things are really bad, if you do a meditation three times a day, it's basically thank you, it's gratitude. You are choosing to be grateful or choosing to look at the more positive side of things starts to manifest around you. And it starts to sort of give you a better outlook than, you know, than gloom and doom. I think that synchronistic events can be used to replay traumatic events. I mean, the same way that, you know, someone who's been traumatized may reproduce the trauma in their relationships around them. People can be doing that in their environment as well. You know, some people seem to have just, you know, atrocious, horrendous luck with things. And, you know, if you do therapy with them, you find that, you know, they're working on unresolved issues from past awful things that
sure.
have happened to them.
They bring a cloud over their head, don't they?
Yes. And, you know, you can disperse the cloud by choosing what you want to think and what you want to feel. You know, you can sort of fight back by saying, well, no, I'm going to feel this. And if you do it regularly, one of the marvelous things about the brain is that the more you think something, the more ingrained the pathways become. And you become more proficient at whatever state of feeling or thought you practice. So, you know, if someone practices being anxious and depressed all the time, they get good at it. But, you know, on the same path, you know, if you choose to tell yourself things are better than they actually are, or that you're feeling better than you actually are, your brain will cue off of that. And you can actually sort of lie to yourself and things will get better. And then things will be better. So there's choice involved. And that's, you know, one of the major things about synchronicity is, you know, you have a choice about the patterns you look for around you. You have a choice about how you direct, you know, the course of your life. And synchronicity gives you tremendous choice because not only are you changing how you feel in your internal state, you're actually changing what appears around you as well.
Let's go next east of the Rockies. Brad's with us, Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Brad. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
Good.
I'm really listening intently to what you said, what your guest just said about changing the patterns of how you think. Boy, I'm going to need to listen to the recording of this one. But the reason I called is you want to talk about weird. When I was a child, the one recurring nightmare I ever had, and I had it up several times when I was 13, involved pushing this huge boulder up this steep hill, only have this thing topple down right at the crest. Torturous hard labor. Now, if you recognize this character from Greek mythology, hear me out. I didn't know. Well, in the intervening years, I go through all these instances where I cheated death, man. I mean, the day I cross over, God's going to yell at me for being late. I've almost been shot at by cops barging into a building looking for someone else finding me. I've survived a freakish bike wreck that landed me in a neurological intensive care unit with a traumatic subarachnoid hemorrhage, and I walked out less than 72 hours after I was carried in when I could have been dead, crippled for life, what have you. I survived a freakish scuba diving accident in 97 in California, and here's where it becomes the crux of it when I kind of discovered what my dream was about. I get sucked out to sea in a tidal surge. Any number of ways to die. If you're a diver, you know that. You could have the regulator ripped out of your mouth. You could have been knocked against the back of the head, knocked unconscious. You could have lost your air and just been so far out you'd never get back.
Get an air embolism on the way up.
An AGE or kill your gas embolism, right? The dreaded AGE. Well, right after this, a couple weeks after this accident, I'm talking with this friend of mine. This is in Southern California. I'm talking to a friend back here in Savannah, telling him about how I had this dive accident, which is not like me to have a bad dive, and how, God, I'm so lucky to be here. And I didn't bring up childhood nightmare because it just didn't go with the flow of the conversation. Well, right after the conversation ends, I walk to the living room and my two roommates are watching this TV show that was on at the time. I think it lasted one season. It's called Cracker, about a police psychologist trying to crack open the suspects of the in like a murder.
Right.
And he's taunting this one guy, and he's saying, and if you don't own up to it, you'll be like Sisyphus, forced to roll this huge boulder up this steep hill, only to have him topple down forever and ever. I'm like, oh, my God, that's my dream. Well, of course, you know, I'm 31 years old. I last had the nightmare, I was like 13. I run to the bookstore. Okay, Greek mythology, Sisyphus. I got a name on this guy now. I dreamed I was Sisyphus. I look him up. And Sisyphus was put by the king of Hades to this eternal torture for the crime of cheating death. And I just went white, and I still get goosebumps even reliving it now. And I don't know whether you want to call that synchronicity or God, this guy, I'm still trying to work it out.
How many more lives do you think you have left?
I don't know, man, but I do have a cat.
Nine lives.
I don't know, man. And I'm not even going through all the times I've cheated death. I'm just going through the ones I can describe because I figured out other callers you want to talk to as well. I don't know what you call that. Your friend there, Kirby, was just saying, okay, you know, you can change things by just, I don't know. And by the way, I'm a ghost tour guide here in Savannah.
So you've got it all there. All right. Any reaction here, Kirby?
Yeah. You know, one of the amazing things about synchronicity is that, you know, everybody is the center of their own matrix of it. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you have your own gravitational field.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people have themes in their lives that, you know, will repeat for long periods of time through the synchronistic events around them. I mean, I don't know the caller well enough to say, you know, where the theme of cheating death appeared in his life first. But, you know, one of the things is that the energy that produces these events seems to be not dependent on linear time. So, you know, you actually sometimes run into things that look like events that happen in the future, and you're seeing the events or ripples from them now. So, you know, it's a very kind of, it's hard to interpret them, but, you know, people live in sort of these matrixes of personal myths. So, you know, I don't know what his sort of psychodynamic background is or, you know, what he may have been projecting, but, you know, it's absolutely real that he's the center of that theme.
All right, let's go to our Skype line. Michael's there in Lubbock, Texas. Hey, Mike,
yeah,
go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
First of all, George, I just wanted to say that I'm glad that you had the topic on tonight. I've been a longtime listener for a long time, and I was going to say just by chance, but obviously not, that I happened to tune in tonight. And my message was that at first I thought that I had chosen this topic to be on tonight and that I had made it happen. But later on in the discussion, I realized that I just had found and chosen to be in the dimension where the topic was on tonight.
You tapped into it.
On tonight. So, but there was also a little bit of a, you know, warning for the listeners to go with this, that you can be in the reality where it's where something is happening. But if you let it slip and you start to lose your confidence, you can end up where it wasn't going on. So keep the confidence up. And I've been telling my friends and my family, because I was going through a life change, that I don't know why and what's going on, but I have to just make something happen. I have to follow through with things and make sure that I do it no matter what.
Well, that,
and
that's a good point. Hey, do you ever get negative, Michael?
Well, this year. I'm sorry?
Do you ever get negative?
Yes, actually, it was kind of going on at the same time. And almost in the same day that I would get so happy about something, and then it would turn around, and something else that I was worrying about would happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought of it as a test, you know, that was going on that, well, am I going to persevere? Am I going to go through with it? And then I kept getting the confirmations that, yes, I'm on the right path.
Well, Kirby, how does negativity fit into all of this?
Well, you know, the synchronistic events reflect any emotion or any pattern of thought you have. So, you know, people that have been highly traumatized will reproduce traumatic events around them. So, you know, they seem like that dark cloud. If you consider emotions as energy, for instance, using them as a metaphor, they're just energy. You know, whether, you know, it's a fear or love or any other emotion, they all seem to drive synchronistic events almost equally. So, you know, whatever you're putting out is what you get back. And there's no, like, judgment in that. You know, I don't think that synchronistic events test people. I think they reflect what's already going on with them.
Stephanie's in Houston, Texas. Let's go. Stephanie, take it away.
Hello.
Hi.
I always thought that synchronicity was kind of like happenstance. You know, like somewhere in the universe that you just kind of get back to something. Anyway, my birthday was this week. And I know, George, your daughter has a birthday February 2nd?
Yes.
Yes. So is mine. Anyway, we were going out to dinner, and we decided to go on Friday instead of Thursday. And instead of at 2 o'clock, we went at 5 o'clock. And my favorite number is 22, and we arrived at this place. And that we always go to for since 1990. We've been going there anyway. And the waitress said, well, you want a booth or a table? And we said, oh, a booth. And she said, sit 22. Oddly enough. Weird, right?
Yeah.
And so we sit down, and the waiter came over, and I looked at him. And I said, Kevin, it was my brother, my half-brother. Okay, I'm from a family that divorced when I was 4.
Did you know he was working there?
What?
Did you know he was working there?
No.
Boy, that's neat. That is different.
That's what I think synchronicity is.
It's everywhere. Only got a minute left here, Kirby. If you could leave us with one quick thought about synchronicity, what would that be?
Well, you know, this is sort of an amazing ability that you already have. You know, you don't have to train for it. You know, you although people would like people to buy the book, you don't have to learn how to do it. You're already doing it. It's a natural ability that is constant, that's already being used. You just have to sort of look for it in order to notice it.
More tuned-in people are using it, I think, more than most.
Yes, you know, if you're open-minded, you're more open to the possibility of it existing, and, you know, that allows you to perceive it.
Absolutely. Kirby, thanks for being on the program.
Well,
I really appreciate it. You were indeed a great surprise, by the way.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Kirby Surprise, his book, Synchronicity, and it is a great, great read. Don't forget Dr. Raymond Moody, our special guest on our next Coast to Coast show. Plus, the first hour, we're going to talk about Morgellons disease and how the CDC has simply said, nah, it's up in your head. It's not happening. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.